sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Anita Diamant, author of The Red Tent, and four other novels, including the recent The Boston Girl, as well as seven very influential nonfiction books about Judaism. We'll also have a visit from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom and Lashana Tova. It's the Jewish New Year of 5775 now, a bright, shining new year filled with promise and potential. But this is also the most serious time of the year for Jews when we examine our conduct and seek to set a positive tone in this new year. This coming Friday night is the big night, the evening of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, Kol Nidre Eve, holiest night of the year, a prelude to the holiest day of the year. Yom Kippur is a fast day when adult Jews, those of us older than 13 years old, neither eat food nor drink water, 24 hours in which we examine our souls and seek forgiveness for the wrongs we've done in the past year. This is also a time of exaltation. That's why they call these the High Holy Days in Jewish tradition, but there is a sense of pressure. We are in the heart of the 10 days of repentance now this Sunday, in the midst of the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, when we Jews try to right the wrongs we've done in the last year and reconcile with anyone we've injured or offended. It's a challenge to try to heal our actions from the past 12 months, and it is perhaps a greater challenge to change the habits we've fallen into that lead us to do things we are not proud of. Our goal during these days of awe is to look honestly at ourselves and ask God to forgive us for those failings we've committed, and so to become whole. But as the Talmud tells us, for sins against God, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, atones, but for sins against other human beings, the Day of Atonement does not atone until we have made atonement to them personally. God cannot heal the breaches in our relationships. Only we can do that by going to the people we've wronged and asking them to forgive us. This is the most important time for us morally, a crucial period of reflection, self-examination, what Israelis call cheshbon ha-nefesh, taking an accounting of our souls. On Yom Kippur, this fast day of atonement, holiest day of the year, which begins again Friday night, we commit ourselves to repair the world through repentance, prayer, and charity, tshuva, tefila, utzedakah. The melody that captures the essence of Yom Kippur best is also the only melody that people come to temple just to hear, the Kol Nidre, the renunciation of failed vows that begins the night of Yom Kippur. It's the melody that for many people captures the heart of the Jewish experience with just a few minutes of music. Here's the great cantor Alberto Mizrahi's rendition of the first part of the Kol Nidre.
Oh,
That was most of the Kol Nidre as sung by cantor Alberto Mizrahi with an arrangement from Sholem Secunda. Kol Nidre is designed to bring us close to what is holiest within us. At this time of atonement and return, we do well to remember that holiness begins for Jews with personal actions, mitzvot, not simply words or professions of faith. The way to improve the world is by doing acts of goodness, blessing, and courage, not talking about them, not even with God. That's what we dedicate ourselves to this week, actions that matter and improve the world. Nonetheless, we do need to ask God for help. And that's never more clear than in the Kol Nidre's soaring, melodic conclusion. Here's Israeli cantor and Broadway star David Fisher, Dovid Fisher, the end of the Kol Nidre.
Ahoy, ahoy, ahoy.
We could do a whole show on the melody of Kol Nidre, its many interpretations, famous stories about Kol Nidre Eve, jokes about Kol Nidre, and so on, but the truth is the only way to truly appreciate Kol Nidre is to hear it live in synagogue on Friday night, the eve of Yom Kippur, in a room filled with fervent prayer, soaring music, and the power of this great day of atonement. It's truly an amazing experience. It begins this Friday night at sundown, and for those of you who haven't yet made arrangements, go to your nearest synagogue immediately and do so. It's a night you don't want to miss. At my temple, Temple Emmanuel, you can be our guest for free, but you have to contact us, 327-4501. Anita Diamond has been a prolific author of nonfiction books about Judaism, Jewish life cycle, and conversion to Judaism, and became a major literary success with the publishing of her first novel, The Red Tent, one of five novels that now includes the recent The Boston Girl. She has also been an important player in the revival of the use of the Jewish mikveh, the ritual bath, among non-Orthodox Jews. Find out why from Anita Diamond when we return in a few moments right here on Too Jewish. Join the Tucson Hebrew Academy as we celebrate and honor an all-around mensch, Pima County Supervisor Ray Carroll, Sunday evening, November 2nd at the JCC. Supervisor Carroll's great contribution to THA as a board member and the work he's done as a public servant for Tucson and Pima County is an inspiration to people of all faiths and backgrounds. Ray Carroll's commitment to our community is an example of how to make the world a better place. Also at this year's Tikkun Olam event, we welcome back world-renowned comedian, author, Two Jewish Radio Show guest, and Jewish Day School graduate, the very funny Joel Chasnoff, as MC and entertainer. In addition to this hilarious comic and our worthy honoree, Tikkun Olam offers dinner, a silent auction, and a great chance to socialize. I can tell you personally, it's one of the best and most enjoyable nights of the whole Tucson year. This is the Tucson Hebrew Academy's largest fundraiser. We'd love to have you join us. For tickets or sponsorship, call 529-3888. That's 529-3888. Or visit our website, thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Anita Diamant. She is a prominent author, having written a series of extraordinarily successful and important nonfiction works. She then shifted to fiction and has written novels like The Red Tent and the recent The Boston Girl. I want to welcome Anita Diamant back to Two Jewish. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning to you, too.
So, a funny question. what's the difference between writing a nonfiction book like Choosing a Jewish Life or Living a Jewish Life, The Jewish Wedding, any of the books that you wrote, Saying Kaddish, and writing a novel?
Well, writing a novel is harder, in my experience. I think I'm more comfortable with nonfiction. I wrote as a journalist for a long, long time. And in that world and in the world of my nonfiction Jewish books, I'm describing the world rather than inventing one. And I interview people and read, and it's, in a funny way, more collaborative. Writing fiction is more frightening because everything is open. There's no limit on how many pages you can write. There's no one necessarily to interview past a few. Sometimes you can interview, but really the characters have to come out of your head. So they're very, very different, and I find fiction writing much harder.
Do you enjoy it more even though it's harder, or is it just harder?
It's just harder. but I will say that it reaches so many more people that it's enormously gratifying to hear from readers how it touches them or moves them or angers them. And the Jewish books have a much more specific targeted audience. It's a much smaller audience, which is fine. It's just that it's a different feedback loop.
Yeah, I would think so. And I expect no one's going to say, can you please present a revised version of The Red Tent this year?
Actually, in a way, that's kind of sad because, for example, I am at the moment revising and updating Choosing a Jewish Life, which was published, in fact, the same year as The Red Tent. And I can improve the language. I can make it better. I can also update it and add things that weren't true in 1996 and correct things that no longer exist. So it's a privilege to be able to improve what you've published. And you can't do that with fiction. It's done.
You know, fascinating. All you can then do is a sequel, I suppose, which everybody seems to do nowadays.
Yeah, I didn't. It's sort of why she dies at the end. She's finished, and I'm finished. And over the years, people have certainly asked me many times if I was going to write another biblical,
epic,
biblically based story. And the answer for 17 years now is no. And while I never say never, it doesn't move me. I feel like I did that once, and I'm sure that I wouldn't do it the same way, and that would disappoint people. And I'm not called to. It's not what my imagination asks me to do.
And with something as challenging as that, you better really be motivated.
Actually, the first person who I talked to, that an agent, before I'd written anything, said, "You have to love what you're doing, because you're going to spend 2 or 3 or 4 years of your life living with it. It's like being married to it. And if you don't love it, you're going to hate it, and it won't turn out well."
We will talk much more with Anita Diamant, our guest this morning on Too Jewish, when we come back in just a moment.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road Office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke. Tell us about your product, Freedom Smoke.
Hello, Rabbi Kohan. A pleasure to be here again. Electronic cigarette industry has been around for years. Our product, one of the best things that we've done to improve it, is the base ingredients for our product are brought in from outside of this country, the only place in the world certified kosher.
Kosher, smokeless, no tobacco, and a variety of health advantages. Do you have a lot of former smokers that have kind of quit because of Freedom Smoke?
Absolutely. We have several people who have written to us, as well as told us on a personal basis.
How many flavors are there of what you sell?
Over 700.
And when people walk in the store and they don't know what to do, what do you tell them?
We start them off by finding out what they smoke and how much they smoke. We then set them up with the nicotine level that's appropriate for them, and we find the correct flavor, and that's all that it takes.
How do people find your stores?
They can find us on the internet, of course, freedomsmokeusa.com. We have a toll-free number, 800-705-7013. Word of mouth is really good for our company, bringing people into our stores.
And it's kosher.
That's correct. Yep.
We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com, T-O-O, Jewish Radio. You can hear all past and present shows streamed from the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. Remember, Yom Kippur begins this Friday night, October 3rd at sundown, just 5 days away. It's time to make arrangements to attend services. My own Temple Emmanuel offers them to everyone at no charge. Be our guest, but you do have to pre-register. Call 327-4501, that's 520-327-4501, to attend Yom Kippur services at Temple Emmanuel. As you know, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, this coming Friday night through Saturday, is a fast day, which inspired this spectacular old Saturday Night Live skit by Ben Stiller and Andy Stamberg. It's well worth revisiting. It's set on Yom Kippur afternoon, the time when we all fantasize about food.
I'm Jewish Willy Wonka.
So you're Gene Wilder?
Yeah, basically. Ben, you need to eat your skin and bones.
But there's no food here.
Oh, really?
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination.
Where am I? You're in a magical world of Jewish foods. It's every taste you've ever dreamed of. From salty to fishy.
Are those pickles?
Yes, they are.
Half sour?
Half sour and full sour.
Both kinds!
There is no food I know to compare with good delicatessen. If it's bad, that's good too, 'cause it's also fun complaining.
Who made all this food?
I have an army of little men.
Oompa Loompas?
No, they're just regular Jewish guys.
If you want a Jew paradise, open up your mouth and chew it. Want some extra schmear? We'll do it. Try the number 5, the Richard Lewis.
I can't finish this.
Take it home, you'll eat for 2 days.
There is no place I know like this Jewish food hallucination. You will find us back here on Yom Kippur next year.
That was a fabulous take on the genuine food fantasy each Jew who is fasting experience in the midst of the Yom Kippur day, from Ben Stiller and Andy Stamberg. We welcome our Mivi Naan, Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat L'Shana Tova.
Good morning, Rabbi, and Shana Tova Umetuka.
Yom Kippur is coming up this week, Friday night and Saturday. It's a huge day for Jews in America. It's a huge day in Israel, of course, but sometimes a little different than the way we commemorate it here in America, which is a synagogue holiday. Talk a little bit about, if you would, what Yom Kippur means, what the Day of Atonement is in Eretz Yisrael, in the Holy Land of Israel.
Okay, you know, now that I have an experience of, you know, being here for one Yom Kippur last year, so I can, like, compare it. And I can tell you that it was, like, shocking for me last year when we worked on the all the way to synagogues, because we are not driving on Yom Kippur, and we saw, like, so many cars. And my mother was here, as you remember, and we walked and we like, come
everybody's
on.
Everybody's
like,
driving
in Israel, in my hometown, like, everything is like,
In Beit Shean, it's like the town is closed.
Yeah, nothing. Like even the birds, I think, hesitate if to fly, yes or no. But here, and it was like shocking. But you know, everything like that makes you think, and appreciate what you have. Like you know, in Israel, like how, and make me appreciate even more the Jews here because it's so easy to lose track. It's so easy to forget Yom Kippur. In Israel, you can't. Even though if you're 100% secular, you will never, you know, you can't ignore high holidays and not Yom Kippur. And here, like, it makes you really appreciate everyone here who really make all the effort. Because if you're not working for the Jewish community, if you're working for someone else, you know,
it's
your problem. It's Yom Kippur, you know, so.
It's fascinating. You know, one interesting analogy that a person born in Israel who lives here now said to me, he said, when he hears the Tekiya Gedolah, the long shofar blast at the end of Rosh Hashanah, and then again, of course, at the end of Yom Kippur, he said to him, it reminds him of Yom HaZikaron, like immediately. Wow. Israeli Memorial Day, he wants to stand at attention and it causes a certain shiver to shoot up his spine. I never thought about that. Americans wouldn't think about that.
Wow, beautiful. I've never thought about it.
Isn't it fascinating? So
yeah.
There's some ways in which this crossover.
Because the shofar for me, you know, I grew up, my grandfather has a synagogue close to, like, they're sharing a wall.
Right.
So for me, the shofar from being very, like, related to Yom Kippur and
Rosh
I've
Hashanah.
Never made this comparison. So,
isn't it interesting?
Very.
I would say one other thing. You know, no matter how secular you are in Israel, no matter how chiloni you are, or chilonit, everybody does something on Yom Kippur, it seems to me, in Israel.
Yeah, you will see everyone dressed in white and a yarmulke, even though they, you know, never committed even one mitzvah or even, you know, but Yom Kippur, they are all Hasidim, Tzadikim, yeah.
Everybody's righteous on Yom Kippur. Thanks, Oshrat. We'll say Gemar Chatima Tova.
Gemar Chatima Tova.
Sealed in the Book of Life for a good year.
Amen.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, in our tradition, we understand the concept of being immigrants and refugees better than any people on earth. We were called wandering Jews forever, but it goes back to Arami Oved Avi. My father was a wandering Aramean. Our whole nation wandered across the wilderness for 40 years. We do know what it is to be an unsettled person trying to find our way in the world. This is a huge issue in the world today, and not only way off in the Middle East or on the other side of the globe. It's right here at home, too, isn't it?
Right. I mean, we talked recently about displaced Christians in the Middle East who are being persecuted and fleeing their ancient homelands, and how certain long-standing Christian communities have just disappeared, either because they've been exterminated or they've been forced to emigrate. And that is half a world away. That's in places like Iraq and Syria. But, you know, we have several aspects of this issue here that we confront almost daily. Certainly here in Tucson, there are people who go out into the desert, especially in the summer, with two radically different and contradictory objectives in mind. One group of people goes out to help feed or give water or keep alive people who are quote-unquote illegal immigrants. They've crossed the border without proper documentation.
Undocumented migrants, of course.
Right. And without examining the reasons or the motivations, they're human beings and there are people here who feel like their lives are worth saving because we're all created in the image of God. There are also people here who feel like anybody who crosses the border illegally deserves to be killed or at least captured and sent back forcibly. And there are people who go out and literally hunt these people with rifles. So you have two clearly opposed reactions here. I do think you're right that this will be a major issue in the next election. But I also think that there are a few things worth considering. One, for certainly your Jewish listeners, but the majority of non-Native American listeners in your audience are the descendants of immigrants. They're people who came from other places, whether Asia, Africa, Europe, the Tsarist Empire, whatever, remains to be seen. A vast majority of your Jewish listeners can trace their ancestry back to one province or another of the Tsar's lands. And many arrived here penniless, often faked whatever was necessary to get documentation. In the really old days, visas weren't required and nobody had passports. These are all relatively recent inventions. I think in the case of current immigrants, there are two things shocking, but I see we're running out of time. So let's come to this next week.
I think that's a great idea. Tom, by the way, Gemar Chatima Tova. May you have an easy fast, a good Yom Kippur.
Thank you, and the same to you.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, I'm Ben. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can help provide a Jewish education to families at no cost to you by redirecting your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. You can help make Jewish education affordable.
Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. This lets JETCO give scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction or donation. When you give to JETCO, you get 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income taxes are reduced by the exact amount you've given. Supporters of JETCO can give up to $1,053 for a single filer or $2,106 for a married couple filing jointly and get that whole amount back from state income tax.
Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or you can go to JETCO.org.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Abe has a parrot he's very fond of. In fact, this is such a smart parrot. He teaches him how to daven, how to pray, and pretty soon that parrot is chanting the liturgy of the daily morning services beautifully. Abe's impressed. He decides to teach the parrot now how to chant the prayers of the High Holy Days. And the parrot learns to sing all the prayers, both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, perfectly. In fact, it actually becomes something of a pest, singing High Holy Day melodies all day and night. Kol Nidre, and so on. Anyway, at daily minyan services one day, Abe brags to his friends about how this parrot chants services magnificently, and his friends don't believe him at all. Sure, your parrot can chant Hindini. Oh, yeah, your parrot's a cantor, right? They ridicule Abe mercilessly until finally he bets all of them that the parrot indeed can chant services. Thousands of dollars are wagered. Well, the day of Rosh Hashanah arrives, Abe brings his parrot to temple, sets him up on the bima in front of the congregation, puts on his little parrot yarmulke, his little parrot tallis, and says, "Okay, parrot, do your stuff." But nothing happens. Not a sound comes out of the parrot's mouth. Abe tries jiggling the bird, cajoling it. "Come on, parrot, sing already." Finally resorts to threatening it. But nothing helps. The parrot remains silent. Finally, in humiliation, Abe takes his parrot and leaves the shul in shame, with the catcalls of his friends ringing in his ears. On the way home, Abe really gives the parrot what for. "You miserable, flea-ridden bag of feathers, I'll murder you. I'll fricassee you. I'll turn you into a minced parrot. How could you humiliate me like that?" And the parrot says, "Shah, what are you worried about? Think about the odds we'll get on Yom Kippur." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week, Shabbat is more than just Sabbath. It is Shabbat Shabbaton, the great Sabbath of Sabbaths, Yom Kippur. We have two Torah readings on Yom Kippur, one in the morning and a different one in the afternoon service. And while atypically for Judaism, we all tend to agree on what portion of the Torah is read for almost every ritual occasion, on Yom Kippur there's a significant difference of opinion, really different choices as to which Torah section to read. In Orthodox and Conservative congregations, the reading for the morning of Yom Kippur this Saturday is a description of the rites of sacrificing animals on the Day of Atonement, from the time when the temple stood in Jerusalem, followed by the obscure and interesting ritual of the scapegoat. The afternoon reading in traditional congregations is a long listing of the kinds of immorality, especially sexual immorality, that are forbidden by the Torah. The most interesting aspect of all of these sections is the description of the scapegoat, a term that has become part of our regular English lexicon. In the Torah, at the time of Yom Kippur, the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, while preparing the burnt offerings to place on the altar of the temple in Jerusalem, would select two goats. One would be marked for God, the other for Azazel, a kind of code name for that which is unholy. Later came to represent the devil. The goat marked for God, like the bull and other animals so designated for ritual sacrifice, would be slaughtered and roasted on the altar, a normal procedure in the worship traditions of the day. But the goat marked for Azazel had a different career ahead. Instead of being sacrificed in the regular way to expiate the sins of the people and seek forgiveness, that goat would instead be led out into the Judean desert, not physically very far from Jerusalem. You can look east and see it there most of the time. And then, from a mountaintop, the ritual would continue. The high priest would place his hand on the goat and symbolically transfer the many sins of the people to the goat. And that scapegoat, uninjured other than by the moral weight transferred to its horny head, would be set free to wander in the wilderness. The scapegoat, through no fault of its own, would carry the sins of the Israelites out of the land, but it would remain unharmed, an enduring symbol of the errors of our people. The term, of course, has remained with us as a representation of the poor schnook tossed out by more powerful higher-ups to take the fall for their own sins. We still have such scapegoats today, of course. Every staffer sacrificed on behalf of a superior is a kind of fulfillment of this scapegoat routine. So why have this ritual in the Torah? The message is obscure. While the essence of Yom Kippur is the concept of personal responsibility, the scapegoat seems to imply that even on a day dedicated to self-examination and atonement, it really helps to know that some sins can be passed off on a lesser creature, at least symbolically. Or perhaps the idea is that we need to know that there is some ritual that releases us from our many failures, even though we know that we will remain always human and fallible, even after Yom Kippur. The Torah readings in the Reform Jewish tradition, while nearly always close to the traditional ones, are not so on Yom Kippur, and I believe they are superior in a way to the traditional readings. In the morning, we chant the great Torah portion of Nitzavim, Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem, you stand here today, all of you, from the richest to the poorest, the most exalted to the most humble, and the Lord your God presents you with a great and sacred choice. You can either choose to follow the mitzvot, to live a life of morality and dedication to ethics and goodness, or sin and stray from God. That choice is really between spiritual life and spiritual death, but the choice is always yours to make. Choose life, uvachart v'chaim, that you and your children may live long and flourish. Take responsibility and choose life. A great message on this holiest day of the year. Anita Diamond has been an important Jewish author since she began writing nonfiction to help people understand and celebrate Judaism. She's achieved even greater prominence with her novels like The Red Tent and the recent The Boston Girl. Find out what motivates her and what makes a mikveh so special to her when we come back in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114. We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
And now, a special message brought to you by Two Jewish, especially for the 5775 High Holy Days from a unique guest.
Hello. As Jews across America, Israel, and the world gather together for the High Holidays, Michelle and I extend our warmest wishes to you and your families for a sweet and happy New Year. My good friend Elie Wiesel once said that God gave human beings a secret, and that secret was not how to begin, but how to begin again. These days of awe are a chance to celebrate that gift, to give thanks for the secret, the miracle of renewal. In synagogues and homes over the coming days, Jews will reflect on a year that carried its share of challenges. We've been reminded many times that our world still needs repair. So here at home, we continue the hard work of rebuilding our economy and restoring our American dream of opportunity for all. Around the world, we continue to stand for the dignity of every human being and against the scourge of anti-Semitism. And we reaffirm the friendships and bonds that keep us strong, including our unshakable alliance with the State of Israel. So let's approach this new year with new confidence and new hope. Let's recommit ourselves to living out the values we share as individuals and as a country. Above all, let's embrace this God-given miracle of renewal, this extraordinary opportunity to begin again in pursuit of justice, prosperity, and peace. From my family to yours, Shana Tova.
Okay, so that was actually a carefully scripted and presented Shana Tova greeting from the President of the United States, rather than him actually being in our studios here at Two Jewish. On the other hand, Obama's Hebrew was okay. It certainly helps having an Orthodox Jewish chief of staff, by the way, not to mention Supreme Court justices and cabinet officers that he can ask. Anyway, in embracing this message of starting over for the new year, perhaps President Obama was watching his approval ratings in this final term in the White House. In other news, in Brooklyn, following a five-week landmark civil trial and 2 days of deliberation, a jury found the Arab Bank liable for knowingly supporting terrorism in Israel, the West Bank, and the Gaza Strip. According to the U.S. District Court ruling last week, the Jordan-based bank provided material support to Hamas, backing that helped facilitate 24 different terror attacks between 2001 and 2004. The case was brought by nearly 300 U.S. citizens who were injured or lost family members in the attacks, which took place during the Second Intifada in Israel. This was the first civil case against the bank to be tried under the Anti-Terrorism Act of 1991, which allows victims of foreign terror to sue for damages in the U.S. The case has been tied up in litigation for a decade until finally it went to trial in August. The plaintiff's team of lawyers, led by Gary Olson, argued that Arab Bank knowingly processed large payments to Hamas leaders from a Saudi charity, as well as martyr payments of about $5,000 to the families of suicide bombers. Shan Stevens, a lawyer for the defense, contended that the bank had followed all the guidelines set forth by the U.S. and other governments determining which payments to allow and which to block. He said that Arab Bank used software designed to flag names of terrorists designated by the U.S. government. The defense insisted that financial institutions cannot be held liable for transactions that the U.S. government approved. Among the plaintiffs in the case was Sari Singer, who was injured in the 2003 suicide bombing. "I started crying when the mail came in," Singer, daughter of a New Jersey state senator, said after the verdict was announced. Singer was on the number 14 bus in Jerusalem on June 11, 2003, when the suicide bomber, standing a few feet from her, blew himself up. 16 people on the bus were murdered and 100 others injured. Singer's clavicle was broken. She still has shrapnel lodged in her mouth. "I feel validated and acknowledged as a victim of terror," she said. "The jury has given us a sense there's someone responsible for what happened to us." A separate phase of the trial would determine how much the bank must pay to the 297 terror victims and their families. In a statement following the verdict, Arab Bank vowed to appeal, said the court proceedings were a show trial. Anyway, that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world for this new year. We welcome back to Two Jewish This Morning our guest, Anita Diamant. And I have to explain, because I introduced her as Anita Diamant at the beginning of the show, which she says everybody mispronounces her name that way. So I'm now in the great company of people who have screwed up your name.
You know, the funny thing is, it's pretty that way. It's just that not how my parents pronounced it and not how I pronounce it. And I feel funny even correcting people, because it's not, it doesn't offend me or anything, but it is kind of a marker of how well you do or don't know me personally.
I feel like I know you better, and our listeners do too. By the way, when they call me Rabbi Cohn, I will know not to be offended next time.
Right. No, I'm not offended. Okay.
So I assume it was Diamond somewhere, and was it when your family went through Ellis Island that it got spelled the way it is?
No, we arrived here much later than Ellis Island. My father was born Diamondstein in Germany, and my parents moved to the United States in 1947, after the war. And my father shortened it. I think my mother was the one. It was the impetus behind that. She had an unpronounceable Polish name. Her maiden name was, and so I think she was really, she liked the idea of having a simpler last name.
Simplicity isn't always associated with Judaism. and I would say your novels aren't simple either. When you sit down to write, or when you're in the process of writing, do you know where the story's going before you write the book, or does it kind of evolve and change as you go?
I generally know where it's going to end. Where it's going to head. I don't know exactly what the last scene's going to look like, but I have an end point in mind. Getting from the beginning to the end is a bit of an adventure, but generally I do know where that is, and it gives shape to the project as I go along.
You have been deeply involved with mikvahs, and I want you to explain a little bit. A mikvah, of course, is a Jewish ritual bath used for conversions, used originally and still by Orthodox Jewish women for family purity laws. Tell us about how you started to get involved with mikvahot and how that process led.
Well, let's see. When I was working on Choosing a Jewish Life, which is the same time I was working on The Red Tent, I did research on how basically liberal clergy here in the Boston area and elsewhere did conversions ritually, and what kind of study they did. And so I went to the mikveh that was open to the liberal community several times with reform and conservative rabbis who brought their candidates. And the more often I went, the more I felt dismayed by the kind of welcome that we were providing people. The mikveh that was open was only open, as I said, one morning a week, and that was it. And it was very limited access. It was run by and for mostly the Orthodox community for women coming on a monthly basis. So it was not a beautiful, welcoming space. There was no room or time to really reflect on what you were doing. So I started talking to people in the Boston area about, wouldn't it be nice if we had a place where you could actually look in the mirror before and after you immersed in the water, and now you're Jewish and you have a Jewish name. And everyone agreed it was a great idea, but nobody was running with the ball. And then The Red Tent became a bestseller, and I was told that I'd better pick up the ball if it was going to happen. So, because people would talk to me. They would answer the phone. Rabbis were happy that I'd written these how-to books, but not so much the rest of the world. So with a small group of women in the beginning who really were saw the need and the possibilities for a different kind of a mikveh for the whole community. We hired an amazing young executive director, Aliza Klein, and we raised money and we raised awareness, because most liberal Jews don't know anything about mikveh, or next to nothing, or if they know anything, it's negative. We raised enough money, we raised enough awareness, and this is our 10th anniversary year. Mayim Chaim, Living Waters Community Mikvah and Education Center here in Boston. And we've had literally thousands and thousands of people immerse. We are open, for example, before the holidays. We're speaking right before Rosh Hashanah. And for some reason, and we've been open every year before the holidays and welcomed people to come and use the mikveh as a way of preparing for the holidays and centering themselves and focusing on what's really important. And this year, for some reason, the tipping point happened and it's been packed every day. It's been slowly building. And we invite clergy to come and on special clergy hours without asking for a donation. And that's become sort of a tradition here in the Boston area for the rabbinate and cantors as well. So, and the mikveh in here in Boston is used for traditional purposes, for conversions, and women come on a monthly basis, not just Orthodox or traditional women. We have women who affiliate Reform and Conservative and Reconstructionist, and they choose to immerse monthly on their own time and according to their own practice. People come before they get married. People come when they're in their ninth month of pregnancy. Women come in their ninth month of pregnancy. Women come if they, they've decided not to have any more children. People have come on the occasion of becoming a grandfather. Men use the mikveh as well as women. People have used it after medical treatments that and made a distinction between being a patient and being somebody who's moving into health. So we've opened the door and we've opened the possibililities for what a mikveh can be. Boy, that was a long answer,
that
huh?
But a really good one. And I will speak as a congregational rabbi. First of all, your books are great and extremely helpful, not only in the process of conversion. So if everybody else didn't appreciate your books, rabbis still appreciate your books.
I know. I'm very grateful for that, and I love hearing that it's helpful.
It is very helpful. And you're going to be here in Arizona not too long, October 11th and 12th, at the Sacred Waters Conference. Tell us a little bit about the mikveh monologues.
Part of this weekend includes a performance of mikveh monologues, which is obviously vagina monologues.
By the way, Evans is a former guest here.
This is a great idea of hers. My partner in writing this play is Janet Buchwald, who's a director, and the two of us have over the years interviewed people, men, women, people as young as 13, you know, bar and bat mitzvah kids who've used it before their bar and bat mitzvah, and shaped their words into monologues and put them together to really demonstrate what happens at Mayim Chaim. I can talk about it, but if you hear these words spoken by, especially by, if they're well spoken by actors, you understand why somebody would use the mikveh. You might even imagine why you might use the mikveh, and I think the power of art to transform, to teach, is the best tool to use when you're introducing something that's it's very profound, it's very physical, it's not so intellectual. So you need to touch the heart when you explain what goes on in a mikveh, and that's what the mikveh monologues is all about. And I have to say, this is the first time I'm going to see a production that I wasn't part of the casting and the background and backstage. So I'm really, really looking forward to this.
Going to be very interesting. All right, so I'm going to ask the movie TV question. Has anybody optioned any of your books? Would you like to see, you know, the red tent on the big screen?
Well, the red tent is going to be on the small screen in December.
Mazel tov.
Lifetime TV has made a two-part miniseries, two-hour programs, which will be aired on December 7th and 8th, which is a Sunday and a Monday night.
You heard it here on Two Jewish First. Breaking news.
Breaking news. I had nothing to do with the production, so I haven't seen it yet. I've been promised a screener, they call it, soon, but I haven't seen it. The production values are great. It's got some wonderful actors in it. I have to let go of a lot of, you know, when I wrote it, I had particular images in my head, but that's what happens when you let go of it. Someone else has different images. So we'll all watch this together.
Maybe you can go to the mikveh and just release all of those past expectations.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious, and it's in a lot of ways, it's the icing on the cake. So, and I know it will introduce the book to other readers, and so it's all good.
And there'll be more demands for sequels, and
well, maybe we'll see. But I'm not going to supply them. Actually, there've been a lot of biblical fiction written after the Red Tent, and I'm not sure that I was responsible for all of that. But certainly, the success of my book, encouraged other people to give it a shot.
I want to thank Anita Diamond for a great visit here on Too Jewish. You can go to her website, which is...
It's AnitaDiamond.com. It's very easy.
And there's a great blog also.
Yeah, I write a blog, and I have an author page on Facebook and all that stuff. And once in a blue moon, I tweet. I just don't think about it very long.
I just can't. But I'm glad there are people who do.
Well, you know, I have dozens of followers. What can I say?
Why, it's in double figures. you have a lot more followers than the Twitter feed would lead one to believe. I want to thank Anita Diamond for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Lashana Tova, Gmar Chatima Tova, Chag Sameach, all good things.
And to you. I look forward to seeing you in Phoenix.
Me too. That'll be the Sacred Waters Conference coming up in October 12th to 14th in Phoenix. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical playout.
A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 15th anniversary with a special family class and in new locations. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. It's your turn. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not. And we feed you too. Rabbis Sam Kohan and Rabbi Batsheva Appel lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment is easy. Call 520-327-4501 to sign up, or go to our website, templeemmanueltucson.org. The class includes delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. It's free and open to all, regardless of religious background. But please, pre-enroll by calling 520-327-4501. Taste of Judaism has both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, East Tucson, and Green Valley, and the very popular Taste of Judaism family class held at Tucson Hebrew Academy. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. There's no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila at 520-327-4501 for more information and to register today for Taste of Judaism.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Israeli and world music star David Broza. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes for Yom Kippur this week, Friday night and Saturday, with cantor Yitzchak Meir Helfgott and violinist Yitzchak Perlman playing and singing Kol Nidre. My friends, Gmar Chatima Tova, may you be written and sealed in the Book of Life for a good year. May you and your family have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Vacharomei